So, reading from the Jivadharma, chapter 15, Pramaya, Jiva Tattva. Om Gyanat Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksu Rasmulatam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam. Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siddhadvaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're up to chapter 15. I think Wednesday is more or less an advanced course, and Sunday it's more or less more general. It's the Bhagavatam. It can be relevant. This is very philosophical. Of course, the Bhagavatam is very philosophical, but it's also couched in a nice story about people coming to Krishna consciousness. And this is the story of one logician who, researching Lord Chaitanya, who was also a logician before he attained love of Godhead, this logician became interested in Sri Chaitanya, became interested then in associating with people, and got the Bhakti Lata Beach, that seed of devotion, that inspiration, that taste, that experience that convinces you, Prema Pumartha Mahan, that the goal of life is to attain this experience. Ramanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev. Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. We're wandering from universe to universe, from species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna we get to Bhakti Lata Beach. I look at my own journey. It's just somehow or other, it's mercy. Krishna set it up that at a particular time of innocence, before I was too hardened, too attached, too set in my ways, too skeptical, whatever it is, somehow or other, I was open to that experience. And somehow or other, I don't know how, it is a certain sukriti, a bhakti sukriti, that enables you to accept that the goal of life is to give yourself. And this happens to this Vrajanatha. Now we're going to follow his education in Krishna consciousness, and therefore ourselves get a complete education. And right now he's asking his Guru Maharaj, Babaji Maharaj, he's asking his Guru Maharaj about this Dasha Mula. these 10 truths that Lord Chaitanya gave. 8 truths of Sambandha Gyan, which is metaphysical knowledge, which contains basically pramana, the means of knowing, and prameya, the object of your knowledge. The object of knowledge. That's called Sambandha Gyan. That's basic metaphysical knowledge. What is the object of knowledge? What is reality? And what is your means of understanding it? And then there's what is the evidence, not the means of knowing, what is the evidence that something is true and what is true? And then there's abhideya, which is the means of knowing. And then there is prayojana, the experience, the goal, what it's like when you actually do know. And in bhakti, that's love. When you actually know God, you love God. You prema, you experience God. Pritti, you love God. Anyway, so right now, Rajanath is asking various questions, which Babaji answers by the verses of the Das Mula. And he just explained prameya, one object of knowledge is shakti. The science of what is shakti. And now another prameya, another object of knowledge is what is the jiva? What is the living entity? So he learned prameya tattva. He doesn't live in the ashram. He went back home. There's even a question of whether he gets married or not. And now he returns, and we'll have to read a little bit here, because as you remember, each chapter gives the setting. But I think it's kind of interesting. The next day, Rajanath reached Srivas Angam earlier than on previous days. That's the house of Srivas Thakur. I guess he's already passed away, but even today, his house is a place of pilgrimage. The Vaishnavas from Gojram also came before our evening to take darshan of Sandhya Arti and Sri Premdas, Paramahamsa Babaji, Vaishnav Das, and Advaita Das, and all Vaishnavas already seated on the Arti Mandap. So that's just across the river from Srivasanga. So, the boat ride may be 20 minutes, it may be another half hour walk. Maybe it took him an hour to get there. So we're reading about these Vaishnavas from Gojrindvi. Vaishnav Das was a Mayavadi sannyasi and then became a Vaishnav. When Vrajanath saw the Babas of the Vaishnavas from Gojrindvi, he was struck with wonder and thought, I perfect my life by having their association as soon as possible. This is the key. I can't stress it enough, to get sadhu sangha, to get the association of people that actually have some feelings of devotion in their heart. If you want to advance, that's what you have to want. You can only get it from people who have it, and therefore you have to want their association. When those Vaishnavas saw his humble and devotional disposition, all of them bestowed their blessings on Vrajanath. Humility is so powerful. Humility attracts mercy. It's like a science of Krishna consciousness. Real, legitimate humility, that you're always cognizant that there's an authority for yourself, God and those who represent God, the Shastra and the Sadhus, that is more important than any opinion you have and any attachment you have based on those opinions. So here we're getting a little glimpse of Vaishnava culture. Humility, when Saint Augustine, I think, thought it was, yes, you know, how do you advance? He said three things, humility, humility, humility. It's such a wonderful feeling to not strive to be the controller and authority, but to be satisfied to follow the controller and authority. And to actually feel that. That's what we should all be hankering for. We get so much caught up in our own ambitions. And even if we don't have confidence in ourselves, sometimes psychologically, it's not that we want the humble position. When Arti was over, Vrajanath and the elderly Babaji began to walk southward together in the direction of Godrum. Raghunath Das Babaji saw an incessant stream of tears flowing from Vrajanath's eyes, and feeling very affectionate towards him, asked lovingly, "Baba, why are you weeping?" So it develops such sweet relationships. When someone is humble and surrendered, invokes so much love. I have a kind of a personal example, you know. My mother was a very successful, powerful lady in everything she did. And very, very strong. But now she's 94. She's become so dependent. And it makes her much more attractive, actually. Much more sweet. That sweetness and beauty of personality is invoked from true dependence, not codependence, where you are dependent because you, the person becomes an extension of your own needs and ego, but dependent. Because you really feel shelter. Rajanath, Baba, when I remember your sweet instructions, my heart becomes restless and the entire world seems devoid of all substance. My heart is becoming eager to take shelter of Sri Gaurangadev's lotus feet. Please be merciful to me and tell me who I really am according to Tattva and why I have come to this world. So this is a very seminal question. Who am I and why have I come here? Until you get to that question sincerely in your heart, you really haven't begun spiritual life. You know, many people, they search for guru or they search for a path. You know, like looking for water and digging many holes, you don't get any place. So sometimes people have to be directed to find a path. But it all begins going in the heart, wanting, humbly, wanting truth and wanting to follow the authority of truth and wanting to find someone who represents that for us. Babaji, my dear son, you have blessed me by asking such a question. The day that the Jiva first asked this question, this is Babaji, is the auspicious day on which his good fortune arises. If you will kindly hear the fifth shloka of Dashamula, all your doubts will be displayed. So this, the day this question is asked, good fortune arise. Who am I? And generally, we act according to certain identities that are really not ourselves. They're our personality. They're our occupation. They're our social position. Very few people actually experience the beauty of themselves. And really deep down in their hearts have that desire to be themselves, to serve, and really want that more than they want to control, even among devotees. The disease of egocentricity, looking at the world through our own desires rather than the will of God, and looking at the world through the will of God, is our essence, because we're part of God and we're meant for His service. So here's this Dasamula. Now this is the one on Jiva Tattva. Now we're going to hear. You have to listen carefully because it's a little bit reading. Splinga Vidhagna Ivachid Anavo Jiva Nischaya Hare Suryasyaiva Tad api tu tadeda vishaya. Vishay maya yasya sa kriti patir. Prakriti patir eveshvara eva. Sajivo mukto pi prakriti vasha yoga swagunata. Just as many tiny sparks burst from the blazing fire, so the innumerable jivas are like atomic spiritual particles in the rays of the spiritual sun, Sri Hari. Though these jivas are non-different from Sri Hari, they are also eternally different from Him. The eternal difference between the jiva and Ishvara is that Ishvara is the Lord and Master of Maya Shakti, whereas the jiva can fall under the control of Maya, even in his liberated stage due to his constitutional position. So this is Jiva Tattva. Living entity is not different from Sri Hari, and also different. The difference is that Ishvara is the master of Maya, and the jiva can fall under the influence of Maya. Vrajanath, this is apurva, unprecedented siddhanta, and I would like to hear some Vedic evidence to support it. Sri Bhagavan's statements are certainly Veda, but still people will be bound to accept the teachings of Mahaprabhu if Upanishads can substantiate this principle. So now he wants Upanishadic references, because faith is the precursor of knowledge. Faith. To get knowledge means you have to endeavor to understand something that is beyond your understanding. That's how you learn. but you have the ability to figure it out if you make the endeavor, but you'll never make the endeavor unless you have faith in that knowledge. That's why to advance, Tadigyan Artham say, Guru Evi, you must have a guru. You must have a guru. You must have a spiritual authority. Otherwise, you no matter how brilliant you are, you get limited to your own frame of reference. So he wants pramana from the Upanishads, which are accepted as Veda knowledge. Babaji, this tattva is described in many places in the Vedas. I will cite a few of them. Yatha ne hudra Vishpulinga Yucharanti Brihat Aranyaka Upanishads. Innumerable jivas emanate from Parabrahman, just like tiny sparks from a fire. And then another verse from the same Upanishads in a later chapter. There are two positions about which the Jiva Puru should inquire. The inanimate material world and the spiritual world, the Jiva is situated in the third position, which is a dreamlike condition, Swapnasthana, and is the juncture, Tattastha, between the other two. Being situated at the place where the two worlds meet, he sees both the jaga-jagat, inert world, and the chit-jagat, spiritual world. So he's the tattva. He's marginal. So here's a reference from the Upanishads. The jiva is the marginal potency. And somehow he's between the chit-shakti and the maya-shakti. And he has the ability to be influenced by either. This shloka describes the marginal nature of the Jiva Shakti. Again, it is said in the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishads. Just as a big fish in a river sometimes goes to the eastern bank and sometimes to the western bank, so the Jiva also moves to either side, namely between a dream state and wakefulness. The dream state is the embracing of the Maya Shakti, and the wakefulness is the embracing of the Chit Shakti, the spiritual potency. So Vrindranath's going to inquire. Now he has a basic idea of what the Jiva is, and he's going to inquire because he's a scholar himself. So he asks, what is the Vedantic meaning of the word Tattastha? The Sajiva is called Tattastha Shakti, marginal potency. Babaji, the space between the ocean and the land is called the Tata, sure. But the place that touches the ocean is actually nothing but land. So where is the shore? So in the same way, the living entity is the spiritual potency. It's not material. It's spiritual, but just like the land is the land and can be covered by the water, or it cannot be covered by the water, but the land is the land, so the spiritual living entity can, like the ocean, the land can be the land, or the land can be covered with water, but it's still the land. So the living entity can be itself without covering or be covered. And he's to touch it. He's right at the shore. Either could happen. The water can recede. The water can come forward. So the living entity is like that. So it's explaining it's to touch the Shakti. In this section, there's some very far-out stuff about the origin of the Jiva. The marginal tata is the line of distinction separating the ocean and the land, and it is so fine that it cannot be seen with the gross eyes. If we compare the transcendental realm to the ocean and the material world to the land, then tata is the subtle line that divides the two, and the jiva shakti is situated at the place where the two meet. The jivas are like countless atomical particles of light within the sun rays. Being situated in the middle place, the jivas see the spiritual world on one side of the material universe created by Maya, on one side, and the material universe is created by Maya on the other. Bhagavan's spiritual shakti on one side is unlimited, and Maya Shakti on the other side is also very powerful. And the innumerable sukshma jivas, subtle jivas, are situated between the two. The jivas are marginal by nature because they have manifested from Krishna's tatastha shakti. The shakti that's borderline material and spiritual. Rajanas. What is the tatastha swabhav? What is this marginal? What is the with marginal nature? It is the nature swabhav that enables one to be situated between both worlds and to see both sides. The marginal nature is the tendency to come under the control of either of the shaktis. Sometimes the shore is submerged in the river because of erosion, and then again it becomes one with the land because the river changes its course. If the jiva looks at Krishna, that is towards the spiritual world, he is influenced by Krishna Shakti. He then enters the spiritual world and serves Bhagavan in his pure, conscious, spiritual form. However, if he looks towards Maya, he becomes opposed to Krishna and is incarcerated by Maya. This dual nature is called tatastha swabhav, marginal nature. So now the questions will be questions of why. This is going to deal with this subject very, very much in depth. Vrajanath, is there any material component in the jiva's original constitution? Babaji, no. The jiva is created solely from the chit-shakti. He can be defeated, that is, covered by Maya, because he is minute by nature and lacks spiritual power, but there is not an iota of Maya in the jiva's existence. Vrajanath, I have heard from my teacher that the Chid Brahma becomes Jiva when covered by Maya. He explained that the sky could be always the invisible Maha Akash. When a part of it is enclosed in a pot, it becomes Gata Akash. Similarly, the Jiva is originally Brahma. When that Brahma is covered by Maya, the false ego of being a jiva develops. Is this concept correct? So this is Mayavad philosophy. So if you want to understand what the jiva is, you have to understand what the false conception of the Mayavadis is, because you may hear it. It's giving you real sound philosophical basis. Babaji, this doctrine is only Mayavad. How can Maya touch Brahma? The Mayavadis propose that Brahma has no Shakti, Lupta Shakti. So how can Maya, which is a Shakti, possibly approach Brahma if Shakti is supposed to be non-existent? So what a beautiful point. How can the jiva be Brahman, Chid Brahman, the spiritual absolute reality, covered by Maya, if according to Mayavad philosophy, everything is an illusion, including Shakti. In other words, Mayavadi philosophy can answer what is the basis of illusion. Because they don't believe that there's any Shakti such as illusion. The conclusion is that Maya cannot possibly cover Brahma and cause such miserable condition. Conversely, if we accept the transcendental Shakti, Parashakti of Brahma, how can Maya, which is an insignificant Shakti, defeat the Chit Shakti and create the Jiva from Brahma? This is very beautiful. I hope you can follow it, but it's defeating Mayavadi philosophy. How can Brahma be covered by Shakti? Besides, Brahma is indivisible, so how can Brahma be divided? So they also, it's undifferentiated oneness. The idea that Maya can control Brahma is not acceptable. Maya plays no role in the creation of the jivas. Admittedly, the jiva is only atomic, but even so, it is still superior as a touch to Maya. So Maya does not create the jivas. The jivas is a separate shakti. Rajana, once another teacher said that the jiva is nothing but a reflection of Brahma. The sun is reflected in water, and similarly, Brahma becomes jiva when it's reflected in Maya. Is this conception correct? Babaji, again, this is simply another example of Mayavad philosophy. Brahma has no limits, and the limitless entity can never be reflected. The idea of limiting Brahma is opposed to the conclusions of the Vedas, so this theory of reflection is to be rejected. Vrajanath, a Digvijay Pandit, that means an undefeated scholar, once told me that in reality there is no substance known as jiva. One only thinks of himself as jiva because of illusion. And when the illusion is removed, one sees that in reality there is only indivisible Brahma. Is this correct or not? Babaji, this is also Mayavadi doctrine, which has no foundation at all. According to Shastra, ekam eva dvitiyam, there is nothing apart from Brahma. If there is nothing except Brahma, where has illusion come from, and who is supposed to be an illusion? If you say that Brahma is an illusion, you are saying that Brahma is not actually Brahma. Rather, it is insignificant. If you propose that illusion is separate and independent element, you negate the undivided oneness of Advaitam Jnana. So basically, I think he's pointing out that Mayavad philosophy does not make sense. When they try to explain the living entity, they say, it's Ishvara, covered by Maya. But one, they don't believe in any Shakti. And if there is a Shakti that covers Brahma, then it's not Brahma. Then it's not God. It's not great. If you say that Brahma is an illusion, then you are saying that Brahma is not actually Brahma, but it's insignificant. Brahma means the greatest. Rajanath, once a fiery Brahmin Pandit arrived in Navadvip, in a conference of intellectuals, he established that only the jiva exists. His theory was that this jiva creates everything in his dreams, and it's because of this that he enjoys happiness and suffers distress. Then when the dream breaks, he sees there is nothing but Brahma. To what extent is this idea correct? Babaji, this is again Mayavad. If, as they say, Brahma is undifferentiated, how can it possibly produce the jiva in its dreaming state? Mayavadis use examples such as the illusion of seeing mother of pearl and oyster shell as gold, and the illusion of taking a rope to be a snake, but their philosophy cannot provide a consistent basis for Advayam Gyan, for undifferentiated oneness. Because the only conclusion they can come to explain this world is that it's illusion. But whose illusion? You can't say the jiva, because according to them, the jiva is also an illusion. It's also an illusion. That's Mayavad philosophy. Every distinction is illusion. So who's an illusion? Well, let's say the jiva. But the jiva can't be the basis of illusion, because it's also illusion. But then they have to say Brahman. But if they say Brahman, and Brahman is not Brahman, because it becomes insignificant, because it's covered by illusion. Vrajana. So Maya has nothing whatever to do with creating the Sarupa of the Jivas. This has to be accepted. At the same time, I have also clearly understood that the Jiva is by nature subject to the influence of Maya. Now I want to know, did the Chit Shakti create the Jivas with their tattvastha swabhav? Babaji, no. The Chit Shakti is the complete Shakti of Krishna, and her manifestation are all Nitya Siddha being. The Jiva is not Nitya Siddha, although when he performs sadhana, he can become sadhana siddha and enjoy transcendental happiness like the Nitya Siddha. All four types of Srimati Radhika's Sakis are Nitya Siddha, and they are direct expansions, Kaya Vyuha, of the Chit Shakti, Srimati Radhika herself. The Jiva, on the other hand, have manifest from Krishna's Jiva Shakti. The Chit Shakti is Sri Krishna's complete Shakti, where the Jiva Shakti is his incomplete Shakti. Just as the complete tattvas are all manifestations of the complete potency, similarly, innumerable atomic conscious jivas are manifest from the incomplete shakti. So now we'll get into that, you know, the jivas fall from Vaikuntha or not. Here it appears to say that they don't. Sometimes Prabhupada, they said they did. Prabhupada also said sometimes they don't. So we'll just read it to face value and try to understand it, and then it can be reconciled in another way. Krishna established himself in each of his Shaktis and manifests his Sarupa according to the nature of that Shakti. When he is situated in the Chit Sarupa, he manifests his essential Sarupa, both as Sri Krishna himself and also as Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha. When he is situated in the Jiva Shakti, he manifests as his Sarup, as his Velasmurti of Vraja Baladeva. And when he situates himself in the Maya Shakti, he manifests Sri Vishnu forms. I don't understand this. I'm gonna stop here now. I'll have to read this part, and we'll start next time with that. Anybody like to ask any questions? Would anyone like to say hello? Let me try to do one more thing.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, Gaurdham Bhaktadas.
Okay, go around. Good. I'm glad that someone's here listening. There's a lot of problem on the phone now. I can't understand. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, there's some problem today. Anyway, thank you all for coming on today. Vanshipal for Trivia Sakha for Sindhubi.